All right, cool. So let's get started. Episode 25, hi, hey, Pod.
25.
25. Wow.
Wow. Quarter
of the way.
100.
Like I'm on a momentous number.
You really
there.
Are.
Yeah.
That's well, incredible.
I'm glad to introduce Jens Jacob, special guest for this week's pod.
Nice to be here.
We have a lot to discuss on this pod, but I think I'd be remiss if not to give you a little bit of time to talk about yourself, your story, especially as like an Indian person that broke out. Did arts, you know, got into the creative space, you know.
It's cool. Right. You're not a doctor.
You're not a doctor or an engineer.
You don't want me to be your doctor.
Or an engineer, yeah.
But I appreciate it. So yeah, what's your story?
So basically grew up in a Indian Christian household, was born and brought up in New York and then grew up in Florida. And right around the time of like, you know, you're trying to figure out what you want to do with your life and career, you know, obviously there's a lot of expectations and to the joke of like going into a very standard, you know, career path. And I think at the time I thought it was going to be computer science or something like that, right? Like that was just like a default. Knowing nothing about it, I just kind of said, yeah, sure, like that's what I'll like start my degree in. And then just... you would find various ways to like create. I wouldn't even say necessarily creative. It's just create, like whether it's drawing, graphic design, building something in your backyard. Like,
right.
You would just find opportunities to create. And I think I loved doing that. It didn't matter what medium or form that took. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say like, if you're looking for the story of like, I always knew I wanted to be a filmmaker, that wasn't necessarily my story. Mm-hmm. It just ended up becoming the ultimate form of creation for me, as I've evolved into that place. Mm-hmm. And so it started off with like graphic design, then it kind of morphed into motion design. I started working for, shortly after high school, I started working for the Tampa Bay Lightning, which is the hockey team out in Tampa.
Wow.
And did a lot of their like in-house motion graphics and stuff you see on the scoreboards and things like that. That was kind of like my maybe like big foray into like a professional career. Didn't think it was like a profession prior to that. It was like a hobby. I was doing a lot of church graphics
motion graphics was introduced to the church. It was like revolutionary.
Yeah.
It was like, wow.
Yeah.
They're like, going to go viral.
Yeah. It's kind of funny to say at the time I was in the middle of, I don't even know if I could say this on this podcast, but it was like, there was no middle. It was either doing church graphics or club promo videos.
Yes. Like it was all in the same day.
Yeah.
You actually reused.
Yeah. The graphic. You used the assets. Community building.
Yeah, yeah.
No. Yeah. So it was funny. Like I did a lot of Indian parties. Like,
oh, nice.
Like not that I specifically did it, but like I like did a lot of the videos. Like I was like known for that in one world.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was known for like church videos in the
amazing.
Other. Yeah. It's pretty funny. I've been redeemed since. And, like, you know, like,
yeah, good, but, of course, let it be noted.
Yeah. Yeah. So then I think long story long, I kind of got into this existential crisis of like, well, if I really want to take this seriously, I either have to potentially get a degree in it, go to film school, or... And I started, shortly afterwards, my professional career started to really take off locally, where I started working for the Tampa Bay Lightning, did some stuff for ESPN locally. Like, nice. We were a part of this show called Gruden's QB Camp.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember that show.
That's
show. Cool.
Crazy,
that's
right?
That's a great show.
I was a part of season one for that, and... crazy, wouldn't have thought that was going to be the show that it became.
Mm-hmm.
It went on to like be nominated and winning
ESPYs.
Oh,
ESPYs, it was an amazing show. Yeah.
Yeah. And just to be around. And funny enough, I'm not into sports. So like...
oh, wow.
It
was
hilarious.
It was like the most like unusual like role for me. And all my cousins and friends were jealous like in terms of like being a part of it. But I didn't really care. But at the same time, I could still see the passion that they
so
had.
So you were on the
that.
Production set on that project?
Yeah,
or what
I was
doing?
I was like a gaffer / second cam op on that.
There you go.
Yeah.
Started from the bottom.
Started from the
bottom.
Actually, that was pretty high. I'm surprised I didn't start from PA on something like that.
That's interesting that sets have those role gaffer.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Totally. And I mean, obviously ESPN's a big name, but what we're talking about back then is like very small. It was like... couple lights and like, you know, like Gruden and like a quarterback just talking. It was like an interview setup. So
totally.
It wasn't that crazy of a
production,
setup to do or a production to do. And then decided I wanted to take it seriously. And I was going through an existential crisis at the time because my family, like, you know, they wanted the best for me. So mm-hmm. what they knew as the best was what they knew as success and for what sure. they knew, like, the career path would
like,
be.
Like, parents, I'm a gaffer. What are you talking
about? Yeah. I'm a gaffer. Don't worry. ESPN.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, what were they saying at that time?
I don't think they fully understood.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, is a lot of it. Like, they didn't know what I was doing. It looked like a hobby. It looked like ministry. It looked like, you know, other things than like a career or mm-hmm. like yep. something that you can make money off or sustainable, like totally. Money off to take totally. Care of a family. And mm-hmm. I think that's what they were looking for.
Are your parents first generation?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Wait, which one is first generation? Because I thought I was first generation.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
I
don't know. I always assume.
This is like a great thing to like clarify.
Yeah.
I think of first generation as in that I was born here first.
Yes.
Oh, is that what
that is? Yes. That is the definition.
Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah, sorry. So they immigrated over and then I'm first generation.
Okay.
You know, they wanted the best for me. And there was some clear paths for what that looked like. And I remember there was one particular conversation I had with my dad. And it was around God's will for my life. My dad's a pastor. I'm a PK.
So that's
very challenged and very.
That's another dynamic.
Yeah. It was some deep rooted issues. No, I'm kidding.
You're not a doctor, Dad. I'm a doctor for the Lord.
Well, this is what's interesting about that because, you know, one of the first things that he said to me, which I'm grateful for, was he said, you know, pray about it and see what God's will in your life was. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I don't think I've ever done that.
Wow.
Which is weird to say that I grew up in the church, mm-hmm. you know, was probably like 18, 19 at the time. But I don't think I had ever like thought about prayer or as a way to align myself with what God's will was.
Right.
Versus that it was like a wish list or like a, you know,
like a
for
genie,
healing.
Right.
Or a genie. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that happened and then did that, went out to my room and like prayed, you know, for that. And I felt like I did get clarity on like that this was what I was supposed to do. I was supposed to move to LA. And which is so weird because like I'm sure anybody hearing like move to LA, like that's like such a like mm-hmm. aha moment, like in terms of like anybody would want to move to LA. But for me, I didn't really want to go to LA at the time.
Sure.
It was actually the scariest option out of the three options that I was considering.
Interesting.
It was either go to Miami, go to New York, or go to LA, because that was kind of like where major markets were in terms of like the film industry at the time. Miami was so close to Tampa that it felt like it was so close to home.
Mm-hmm.
New York, I like knew a lot of people there, so I felt like it was another way to be comfortable because I just had like friends and family there. Mm-hmm. And then LA, I knew nobody. So it was like survive or live in a box is what it felt like.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to be the prodigal son. I didn't want to come back. Fail, come back home.
Right.
That
right.
wasn't even an option for me, even though I knew biblically like it's supposed to be. But it wasn't in my head. It was not an option.
Sure. Right.
And so I felt like, okay, I got clarity. I'm going to ask God. And you know, it prayed about it and got clarity. I went back to and told my dad about it. And I was like, Dad, I think I got clarity. Like, I'm supposed to move to LA. And he's like, okay. And they laughed at me. Like, it was like, really painful.
Pray again.
Pray again. And, you know, I as much as I like joke around about like some of the stuff that had happened, it hurt at the time because it was like, yo, you told me to do this. And I'm very grateful. My dad's an amazing person and has been such a huge supporter since, but it was hard for them. That's all I can kind of chalk it up to.
Mm-hmm,
like they don't know how to like, you know, everybody's learning how to parent in real time.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, you're trying to instill wisdom spiritually. And then also go by what your definition of that is. Like you can only define success sometimes by like your standards or your kind of like upbringing in that. And so that turned into a huge argument. And I was like, Dad, you told me to like pray about it. And like, now you're telling me that it's not it. And I was like, well, you tell me, you're the pastor. Like you tell me like what it is that you have in my life. And I was really surprised because he had a pretty clear answer. And it was, he said, well, I was like, well, so what am I supposed to do? He's like, well, you're supposed to finish school. And at the time I did drop out of school to pursue this. I'm not advocating for that on the pod. You should go to school to have, you know, a degree and all that. But I didn't necessarily need it for what I was doing.
Sure.
That was it. So then he said, oh, like, it's for you to, like, finish your degree. And then I was like, I just kept asking questions. I was like, in what? And then he's like, oh, a business. And then I was like, and then what? And then he would say, for you to go get a job in like and work at a bank. I was like, oh, okay. And then what? And then he said, for you to be an executive in that bank. And then I was like, and then what? And then to get married. And then it just kept going, right? And then where it ended was, and then for you to help lead the church, essentially. And that's when I kind of reconciled in my head. I was like, oh, my dad is God in this particular scenario.
Right.
In the sense that it was his will at the time. And again, I don't think he realized it in that sense. He was just trying to guide me in the best way that he thought he could guide
me. Sure.
But it really drove me into, I stopped believing in God at that moment.
Wow.
It was kind of a really surreal moment because I was like, oh, this is just a way for parents to instill or to put a boogeyman version of power
for control
in your life. And that's kind of how I kind of shaped theology at that point.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And it was really bad for me. And I didn't really, I haven't shared that really publicly, until more recently. And I don't blame my parents either. That's the one thing I don't think it was their fault or their ill intention or anything like that. And so then this is kind of how I ended up leaving. I ended up just deciding to double down. And I'm like, I'm going and decided to move to LA. But I needed their blessing. It was kind of this catch 22 of I want to leave and get out of here and do my own thing. But I can't leave until I know that you're okay with it. And so thankfully they were like, okay, go try it out for 3 months and then come back. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I left. It was under this this arrangement that I was just going to just go there for just a season. And then didn't know a single soul out there. I had some family in Orange County and they let me sleep on their couch for the first month as I try to figure it out and get on my own 2 feet. Never moved away from home at that point. Didn't really have any other kind of net that was there. I think had barely maybe $4,000 to my name at the time. It wasn't any kind of responsible, decision in terms of moving out and being on my own. And then when I got there, I got really, I would say it's the perfect blend of luck, favor, and will that happened in terms of a lot of the early parts of my career. I started, even though I had started doing things at maybe a higher level in terms of roles in Tampa, I decided I wasn't going to tell anybody in LA how much I knew. I was just going to really start from the bottom this time. And so I ended up PAing, interning, whatever I could do to just be on set, because I remember
PAing is getting coffee and
exactly. It's like the lowest position in the film industry. And I got to get on the first set through a friend that was my cousin's friend at the time. I wasn't even really close with him, and he let me come on his set, which was a music video for Neon Trees. I don't know if you remember the song Animal.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
back in the day, it was their next big song, which I don't know if it did well or not. But so we were doing the music video for that, and I was just I was just a director's friend. I wasn't even a PA. Oh, I was just there to watch the set. And it was the first time that I got to be on a major set, and it blew my mind. I was doing Child's Play compared to what they were doing. I mean, there was 60 people on set, and you're transforming an entire space to I had never experienced anything like that. And I was oh, this is for sure. I want to know more about this. I want to learn. Nice. I want to understand. So I didn't know anything at the time. I didn't know what a producer did and didn't know.
So something I'm awakened in you. Something 100%. Was ignited.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, I say now, what the thing that I love about the film industry is, it feels to me that it's in its current is the highest form of art and creation. And what I mean by that is it's the paramount because it requires all the other art forms for it to be filmmaking, right? You take music out, you take picture out, you take drawings out, design, fashion, whatever it might be.
It's not film.
You don't have film anymore.
Wow.
And I think that's what I loved about it the most is that I could be a part of all of this instead of having to like maybe just pick one, sure. like be mm-hmm. a part of a label or music or something like that. So yeah, my first year was all music videos. Been on some like really cool sets from Neon Trees, Nicki Minaj, Bruno Mars,
wow.
Lil Wayne, mm-hmm. Nickelback, like, you know, you name it. Been
so
able
from
to
club promoter to music videos. Wow. Come on, that's awesome.
I love it. It's kind of fitting, right? Like the video side of it. And then second year was commercials. I got to be a part of like some really cool commercial sets. Like I remember second year, like the second commercial I was doing, I was signing an NDA and I didn't even know what for. Mm-hmm. Like I had signed onto the job before even knowing like what it was for. And it ended up being an Apple spot. Like we did the iPad 3 launch, which was like such a surreal moment because I was such a Apple fanboy,
right.
you know, to be a part of that and
don't,
see the
don't
iPad.
Tell Zach.
Yeah. And to be a part of that and like finally see a product release before it got mm-hmm. released.
It's
like
amazing.
It was an unbelievable feeling
what
at
a
the
privilege.
Time. Yeah. I can continue, but you tell
me.
Yeah,
So this is interesting because your career is really starting to take off now. From music videos to commercials for Apple, obviously somewhere in there you're simplifying it, but you worked your way up from PA to, you know, getting higher up in the production. What's your parents thinking at this point?
Yes, it must have been well past 3 months, right? It's like year two, right, of your journey.
Yeah, a lot happened in the first 6 months. Mm-hmm. I mean, I went from PA to producing within 6 months.
Oh wow!
It was
God.
Yeah,
that's God.
And that's what I mean. Like there was just like this perfect storm of things that were happening at the time. This producer that I was working a lot with that got me onto a lot of the gigs, the story that I even shared at FlowCon, she had really took me under her wing and she was just starting to launch. It was kind of like right timing because she wasn't like a really well-known producer, but she's like now the queen of music video producing. And she's done like, she has probably more credits than anybody that I know in terms of music videos. Mm-hmm. And I was just starting to get onto ground level of that. And it just kind of was like right time. And it was a lot of just because I was there. So one of the parts that I love sharing about my story is that I didn't really share with people how much I knew about it. I just mm-hmm. constantly humbled myself that I'm willing to do whatever it takes to like be a part of it.
Well, that's what we say actually in leadership, right? It's not actually about capability. It's about availability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very true.
Will
so
you be
true.
Around? Mm-hmm. Will you say
honestly,
yes?
Honestly, I showed up to her apartment, which was the production office at the time, like even when she didn't ask, it was mm-hmm. just like I wanted to be around them so much.
Gen Z, are we listening?
Yeah. Please.
Yeah.
Honestly, like I took any kind of pride that I had that I worked for ESPN or did any of this stuff, and I was like, you know what? I want to learn from this person and this team. So whatever I can do that, and I think from just being available and being around, and then seeing that she could task me something and I would go above and beyond, or I would figure it out. A lot of filmmaking is problem solving.
Mm. There it is.
At the end of the day. So if you can be a good problem solver, mm-hmm. I think you can go into any industry, frankly, not even just filmmaking. But I think that skill that I had early on, I just knew that I need to take problems off of her plate
good.
And help solve them.
There's so many great principles in that. And obviously it led to this rise. There's favor, but we partner with God, mm-hmm. right? And
yes.
so there are characteristics and principles that he works through that you're learning in real time and you're seeing the fruit of it, right? And so, you know, your parents probably, are they changing their tune? Like what's happening?
Yeah, sorry. I just realized that was the original question. In the first 3 to 6 months, I think it was still very hard for them. And I would say where it really changed for them is when I had started at the time Cypher Films, I went from like freelancing on a lot of these big jobs to then creating my own company and then really starting to just develop my own clientele and and then I started doing some nonprofit work. And I think when they saw that my talent could still uphold like faith in God, I think they just were like internally afraid that I was going to LA and that I was ultimately turning from
God.
Mm-hmm. That's I think at the core of like their fear and why they were not okay with a lot of it. But I think once they saw that, I think that changed. And it was like one of the first times in my life that they said that they were proud of me. Mm-hmm. I had not heard those words prior to moving.
You're the first
to LA.
Indian.
No,
it's just
first Indian.
I'm still waiting. I'm
not
still
just
looking
in my
for
family.
That.
I think that's when they started to realize when they weren't close to me in proximity that words really mattered. Because our family wasn't a words of affirmation type of family. It was acts of service and a lot of I'm taking care of you. You're living. Like
it's similar in Asian culture.
And I think once the separation was there and I was on the other side of the country, I think that's when they started to realize I need to tell him I love him. Mm-hmm. I need to tell them that I'm proud of him. And I'm so proud of my parents for even getting to that place.
Totally.
And a lot of it, me and my brother tried to like model, like we would say it first and then, but there are still families now where that's weird. Like even my wife's family, like my wife jokes around that, like you're an I love you family. And I'm like, I didn't even realize that was a thing.
That's Can so I ask funny. Though, yeah. you said when you left for LA at that point, your faith was kind of, had changed because of like the interactions with your father at the time.
Good question.
But then at this point, you know, it sounds like your faith had kind of come back. Was there a pivoting moment when you were in LA where it came back?
Yeah, great question. A lot of it being in LA was kind of like me kind of a clean slate into everything. Mm-hmm. Like it was clean slate to career, friends, faith, all of it. And I think from that, I was able to discover what I believed versus what my parents believed and what I was starting to like distill for myself. And, you know, some of it was, it was a very lonely like first year in LA. I was, not a lot of people know this, but I was like sleeping on couches. Mm. Like, I mean, meaning like a lot of LA is like shared living and you're just trying to like make it work. And so, the first two or three places that I had, I deliberately didn't even like get a bed in my bedroom. I wanted it to feel like an office and I just wanted to hustle. So I just was like living on a couch, literally the first 3 years of being there. And it was a very lonely process. And I think once you go through something like that, or like when you're journeying or like you're starting something new, and when there isn't anybody, particularly when it comes to distraction, you kind of only have God in that. And I felt that like deeply that I knew God had me and I had to discover what my relationship with Christ was at that point. And so in really like, you know, going through that process of allowing myself to feel at that level and bring myself to there, I think I was able to then get plugged into the right church and was able to, yeah, just really discover what faith, it was like a reconstruction of faith at the time for me. Mm-hmm. A big pivotal point in my faith journey was trying to understand purpose in life. I'm trying to understand like, how does this align with purpose and all that. And at the time, I was really big into TED Talks. That's kind of like where I went to for...
As we all were.
Yeah. Man. Yeah.
Old school TED Talks, bring those back.
in a way, that was like Bible for me at the time because I was consuming that more than anything else in terms of inspiration and knowledge and understanding. And I think this stat is true, but at the time, Pastor Rick Warren was the only pastor that I knew that had given a TED Talk at the time. And he had did a TED Talk around the success and struggles that happened after releasing the second best-selling book after the Bible, Purpose-Driven Life.
Wow.
And it's crazy to even think that, right? Like, that's how successful that book was. Like, the Bible almost seems like a given to be most successful, but then you were the next, you know, human-created, you know, most successful book. And he was talking a little bit about the book, and admittedly at the time I hadn't read the book. I just kind of knew about it because everybody and their moms were going through the life groups and stuff with that book. And part of the proposition of the book was he shares a story about Moses and how Moses was a shepherd, and he kind of like used that analogy of like what was in his hand at the time, and his hand inside of his hand was
good.
Was a staff, right?
Yeah.
And there was a very practical element to that in terms of leading, because it was you're taking a herd of sheep and then you're using the staff to like pull or push. I can't remember the exact analogy, but it was very profound at the time. And this idea of like what was in your hand, like kind of distilling it to that question in terms of like how purpose can, you know, be manifested through or God's will in your life.
Good.
It was very profound to me because prior to that, it was always the Bible, the pulpit.
Yeah.
I was going to then potentially take over the church. Mm-hmm. And that was ministry, or that was the way that you would have purpose in your life, was to do something within the church. Could never see it prior to that as outside of the church. And so at the time, what was so profound about that was when I asked myself, well, what's in my hand? It was a camera.
Good.
And, you know, to understand that that could be my influence, my power. And one of the things that the analogy that he gave to that was, you know, for somebody like a basketball player, what's in their hand is obviously a basketball, but the identity of that basketball continues even thereafter.
Ooh.
The him or her Good. Playing basketball,
nice.
Right? This mm-hmm. person will always remain a basketball player to like everybody. And so then what do you do with that? What do you do mm-hmm. with that influence? What do you do with that? And so for me, it was this camera and like, you know, what it would look like in terms of films. And so it was very clear to me at the time that so God was good. Going to use me in this way, whether that's overt or not. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that I'm a faith film or like a faith filmmaker in the sense of that I'm only going to make Christian films, mm-hmm. but there was a lot of purpose that he had instilled in me
yeah.
in what I was going to be able to do with this.
But any film you make, you're going to glorify God.
Exactly.
And that's what is such a beautiful thing I'm taking away from your story. Thanks for sharing your story. That's course, incredible. Yeah. That there were so many times I wanted to stop you, but I was just like, okay.
Oh no, I rambled. Stop me.
No. Cause there were so much principles we could have pulled mm-hmm. out, but people are smart on this podcast that listen to it. They'll pull out the principle. But something that I took away was the goodness of God.
Mm-hmm.
The goodness of God in your life. But what's so interesting is the way that the goodness of God works in and through our lives is not necessarily how we would write it.
Mm, right.
So mm-hmm. your story was rejection. Your story was poverty, sleeping on a couch, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your story was, you know, really starting from ground level. Your story was, you know, some failure, right? All these things, but actually God used all those things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's really the power of our perspective sometimes to understand that, yes, God is in the success, mm-hmm. but God is most definitely in the rejection.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
God is most definitely in the loneliness. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know, what scripture informs us is that actually in the suffering and in the struggle is where he's closest.
Yes.
Right? And it's actually in that process that you found God for yourself.
100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which then became the catalyst for reconciliation between you and your dad.
Yes.
Coincidentally, right? Yeah. And so I think that is so good. I think also too, you know, that revelation of, hey, actually my purpose doesn't need to be limited to being a pastor in a church, but actually what God put in my hand, even outside the four walls of the church, can be used to glorify him.
Yeah.
What an unlock.
Right.
My goodness.
Yeah, it was so profound. Yeah.
That's like the purpose of this podcast.
Yeah.
Right? That's exactly. The purpose of what we did last week, FlowCon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, let's
so
talk good. About that actually. So I know you also, on top of Cypher, you're also in the fintech space as well. You're CEO, co-founder of Saturation. And so recently we just had Overflow kicked off their inaugural FlowCon. You were there, you were able to speak. Can you guys, I wasn't there, I unfortunately missed out.
Oh, you weren't there.
Yeah, so like I know the previous
massive
years.
Massive FOMO.
So can you guys give me a taste of what happened? Give me a recap of what happened at FlowCon.
Well, it was really, we've been saying this all week, a collision of collaboration between this hype network, right, that we're doing right here, and Overflow and Vibe Church, and just kind of not even just blurring the lines, but removing the lines
from
what church ministry and marketplace can look like, mm-hmm. right? It's really hard to explain what was captured in that room, but we'll try our best.
Yeah.
We're missing one very important component here, Pastor Adam, who's traveling to one of our international campuses right now. But Jens was in the room. What was your take? Mm-hmm. I mean, you were one of our panel speakers. By the way, guys, if you haven't caught up, if I fast forward Jens' story a little bit, God continues to be so good and bring favor and blessing on his career. If you haven't seen yet, After Death released this past year, and it was across over 2,800 theaters. I'm getting that right, across the nation. Yeah. It's now streaming on all major streaming platforms right now. And it's not a Christian movie, but it's definitely a movie that provokes thought because everybody's going to die,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's a deep dive into that hopefully compelling people to ask some pretty important questions, which I think can be a gateway to point to Jesus. But, you know, because of just how God has been moving your career, we invited you to be a panel speaker. So you were part of FlowCon. What was your experience?
You know, I didn't know what to expect.
Right.
I think I had zero expectations in terms of just I'm going to show up. But I was profoundly impacted. A lot of the conversations that were happening and just the community you guys have curated, I didn't expect to meet a lot of, like, you know, amazing people. And
yeah.
And I just love that there is that blurring of the line, or like the idea that, like, you can do more in the marketplace. Good. And you can, mm-hmm. you know, impact, you know, people and do ministry at the same time. So I felt like I was a student to it, you know, mm-hmm. in some ways. I was learning just so as much good. As I was, you know, maybe up on stage, but I loved it. I mean, I think what you guys are creating here, and to be a small part of that, I feel very honored to take part.
It's we now, because you've been part of multiple hype
yep.
events.
Yeah.
And this
Where's
inaugural...
my card? Do I get like a platinum, like a yeah, titanium okay. yeah, card
a
or something?
Runes
yeah,
on
yeah
it.
We got yeah. you. We got you. Yeah.
well, I'll say this. In the inaugural FlowCon, just some numbers, yeah. right, that we can reflect on. Mm-hmm. Because we had the, you know, Ye of Little Faith moment where we only printed 200 shirts because mm-hmm. we thought that was kind of the scope of people, entrepreneurs, innovators, you know, kingdom-minded business people that would be attracted mm-hmm. to something like this. Were we wrong? Mm. My gosh.
Yeah,
it was
so
really incredible. Over 350 wow. Paid registered guests that made an investment. Probably half of them flew in.
That's right.
You know, invested into accommodation to be with us for just a few days, mm-hmm. skipped out on work or paused, you know, their entrepreneurial endeavors. To really invest into being part of what I would call history in the making, mm-hmm. the very, very first FlowCon. Of those 350 people, 50 churches were represented,
wow.
which is really, really cool. So pastors, entrepreneurial, pastors were in the room. Then you had over 190 companies represented. And so some of those companies, we had the founder, we had the CEO, we had the owner of the business in the room. You know, for some of the companies, you know, it was executive team, C-suite, or even just directors and managers if it was a larger company, right? Mm-hmm. We had over 70 cities represented mm-hmm. with people traveling internationally. We had a group from Switzerland, from Zurich come mm-hmm. in. We
wow.
had people traveling in from Mexico, people flying in from India
wow.
coming in. And it was just an incredible time. I think what was the common thread that I felt in the room, I'd love your take, Jens, is that there was an earnest hunger
yeah.
and appetite to innovate, to build, whether it was a tech company, a film, a real estate company. It was actually spanning a lot of different industries, but an earnestness to build for the kingdom.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For honoring God, mm-hmm. for glorifying God. Is that the sense that you got?
Yeah. I mean, I had originally thought, just because of obviously Overflow's core base being churches, I thought it was going to be more like
sure.
just maybe like church centric. Mm-hmm. But the fact that a lot of them were startups and even maybe churches or startups for churches or vice versa,
right.
like, I thought that was like really cool to see. I wasn't expecting a lot of that, like mm-hmm. the different types of marketplaces that were represented there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's really interesting, at least two hype events ago. One of the through lines is, like you mentioned it, like being a problem solver spans across all different kind of like scopes of like what you do for work.
There you go.
And this is like a bringing together of all those different places of work. And everybody there is a problem solver, but they want to do it for the kingdom. So like, it's kind of that's what I assumed was happening. And it's good to hear that's kind of there. Yeah. So.
Well, the caliber of people in the room
yeah.
too.
Totally.
So we can talk about a couple of the panel speakers. We had Chiwa Chin mm. in the room. We had one of my board members, Mackie Saturday mm-hmm. in the room. We had Nancy Duarte. Like, it was crazy. So Chiwa, you know, early investor into the Facebook, right? When it was called the Facebook, yeah. that's how early he
yeah,
was.
Yeah.
You know, early investor into TikTok when it was called ByteDance, mm-hmm. right? Early investor into Spotify, right? We got Nancy Duarte, who's done so much work with Apple, actually her first client and currently existing client, but she is the GOAT mm-hmm. in wow. terms of presentation design. And then Mackie Saturday created the brand for Instagram and also in wow. the spiritual space for the Bible Project, which mm-hmm. we all know and love probably if you're listening to this podcast. And what was so impacting to me is that we had these people that are at the top of their game telling stories about how there was multiple inflection points, there was multiple moments in their career where they could either serve profit or people, or they can either serve, you know, the bottom line, or they can serve God, and how core to each and every one of them at the end of the day is, how am I going to align myself, kind of like your story, with God's will? How do I make sure that my career, my company, my business endeavors is glorifying God? And when you hear that from people that are at the top of their game, it hits different. It's like, it was like this like great permission that filled the room, because in the room there was some successful people, but I would say the majority of like people in there would probably identify as, I'm still trying to make it. Right. And so there was this kind of collective like permission in the room of like, okay, cool. Like I can work on advancing in my career or advancing my company, not at the sake of my Christianity, actually in alignment with my passion and my love for God. And I felt like that permission was palpable in the room. But even the caliber of the question askers, Arun, it was hilarious. There's this one person that asked a question while we were on a panel, I think. He actually goes to Vive Oakland. And he was like, hey, so I got a question. We just figured out how to turn air into fertilizer.
Wow.
When should we start the company?
Yeah.
First of all, everybody was just like, wait, what did he just say? And then Mackie was like, does it work? And he's like, yeah, yeah. It took us 5 years, but like breakthrough, like it works. Everybody was just like, get started. Like, this is,
leave.
You're saying you're God. Like, what is happening?
It's almost like he needed that moment to be the permission to start. Yeah. It's like, whoa.
But that was even just the caliber of the question askers. And so it was 350 people like this, collaborating with each other, meeting each other, sharing ideas. And we say this, and we said it all throughout the conference, that you're one connection away from your breakthrough. I don't know of all the stories yet. I've heard just a couple of them. But I get the sense that in a few months, in a few years, we're going to start hearing these stories of these breakthrough innovations, these breakthrough companies, these breakthrough founders, and they just might point back to what happened at FlowCon. That would be cool.
No, that's amazing. And I just want to say, I saw the announcement, 2025 FlowCon already in the books. Let's go. So I just want this to be your pitch. Plan ahead. You know, plan ahead to make it. I know for sure I'm going to be there. So I'm really excited to see what, you know, this kind of the fruit that's produced from this. So
it's going
to
be amazing.
And just kind of on that topic, I think a lot of the stuff about what you're saying, even hearing your story, I think a lot of the stuff that is really powerful is, even if you're building products, the number one thing you need to be able to do is storytell, right? Like, how do I tell the story around the product that I'm building? Even for this guy that's making air to fertilizer, like, he needs to be able to tell that story, right? Because like, I'm an engineer. And so from my point of view, I always thought it was, you know, you just build good tech and like, they'll come. You build it and they'll come, right? But for you, you're in the storytelling business, and we've talked about like deeper connections and building those relationships. What is it about storytelling that, that makes you so passionate?
I mean, for me at least, like our company, the types of stories that we tell, the crazy thing about that is like, we do a lot of like true stories, like a lot of things that might be already out there. And sometimes it's because they're stranger than fiction. And for us, it's like, it's the basic level of like how humans connect is like sharing stories and being able to relate and to understand, you know, what this person's going through their, walking through their shoes. And I think it's like a basic connection level component that often gets missed, that, you know, you think you might have to go right to the product, or you might have to go right to the, you know, sound or music or whatever it might be. And people miss that, that there's lost art in that sometimes, of being able to like find, find positioning within like how you tell your story and like, you know, what you can kind of glean off of that. I don't know if that answered your question, but
No. I think that's around it. It's like, so maybe like an example would be pretty interesting. So like last Super Bowl, we had another one of those like Jesus campaigns. I don't know if you guys had a chance. He gets us, right? And so like, I'll just play it in the background, but essentially it was trying to break down kind of the more modern view of what like love would look like from Jesus as well. And so just curious, like, you know, there's these opportunities for, you know, in the faith space and in like media to be able to get the the word out about Jesus. But sometimes, you know, like there's a lot of controversy about, you know, kind of how this came out. I don't know if you saw
it. What's the controversy?
It's, you know, like what love truly is and what they're trying to portray versus, you know, what maybe some of the more like conservative Christians would say, or what's really in the Bible, right, about this stuff. So, yeah, like in terms of like when you're telling stories, and especially because you're trying to do that crossover with faith as well, mm-hmm. like how difficult is it to really get this right?
I mean, it's very difficult just because of you have a lot of opinions. Mm-hmm. And particularly when you're talking about something as core as faith, there's a lot of identity that kind of like comes like just inherently with that. Mm-hmm. And so and it could be true for this, right? Like if it's slightly like opposing maybe something that's very core to like biblical. And a lot of the stuff that we like to touch is like almost like modern day retakes or like extra biblical and like how that like applies to your life. Like mm-hmm. I always say that like faith and the story of Christ and redemption is like in my DNA. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily always like right on the front side of like the screen of what we do. So it's a constant like art and balance, mm-hmm. but I think if the principles are there, you know, the fruits of the Spirit, the like kind of redemption kind of elements, like that's the kind of stuff that we love touching on. And I think that DNA you'll see across all of our projects. It doesn't matter if it's a commercial for Huggies or if it's a, it doesn't always have to be as overt, I think, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. For me, it's principle. Like, you know, when you can carry that through, it resonates with people. Mm-hmm. Like, I think for the people that are of faith, they automatically, you know, immediately will like see it and feel it. And for the ones that aren't, they'll know that there's something special there. They just mm-hmm. don't know. They might call it something else.
Yeah.
It might be labeled the universe. It might be labeled, you know, faith or, it, you know, but we know what it is, mm-hmm. you know.
I'd be curious to see what both of your takes are on this. And it seems like, I don't think there's malicious intent when it comes to generating this kind of content, but it feels like they open it up a little bit more because they want to attract more people to it. And then the hope is that once they are in this space, you know, it's like all are welcome, you know, that saying that was there. And then once they're in that space, then, you know, they'll just let Jesus take over. I'm just curious what you think. Sure. Is that the misstep? It's just like you want to kind of open up the sales, you know, funnel a little bit more and just get people in and then hope that you can kind of correct it as they get in.
Hey, that's a good kind of perspective, right? It does kind of feel sales funnel-y, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's not what spirituality is, mm-hmm. right? At the end of the day, God saves. And you know, there's certain ingredients and dynamics that are important to that process, right? And so, you know, the acknowledgement that we are a sinner, mm-hmm. and there's this process called repentance, mm-hmm. right? Those are all like literal critical components of the salvation process,
mm-hmm. yeah.
right? And so, yes, the Holy Spirit is the one that ultimately saves and convicts. Mm-hmm. And then it's our response to acknowledge our sin and to repent of our sin. You know, on Sunday, we do it every single Sunday. We mm-hmm. invite people to say the sinner's prayer, right? And to receive the goodness of God and the grace of God. What's problematic, I think, sometimes with some of these ads, specifically He Gets Us, mm-hmm. is that some of the images could be a distortion of what Jesus actually did, mm-hmm. right? And so, okay, yes, Jesus washed feet of his disciples,
yeah,
right? And then you start opening up the aperture and you start, you know, telling a story that might not be theologically consistent, yeah. right? It could bring confusion. Mm-hmm. And I think that's some of the problematic nature of, you know, some of these ads. It's not even just limited to He Gets Us, mm-hmm. right? I think this is going to be a challenge with storytelling overall,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. especially, and this is the part, right? Especially when you are directly saying you're representing Scripture.
Right.
Right.
I think actually sometimes it's easier to not put the explicit label that this is Jesus, but more take the route that you typically take, Jens, which is like, hey, I'm going to try to extract some biblical principle and I'm going to try to tell a compelling story based on this biblical principle. But it gets harder when, so that's why probably The Chosen was really difficult.
I'm actually surprised that
because they're reenacting the Bible.
Right.
Well, I'm surprised they got maybe away with a lot of the things that they do, because they tend to, because it's a whole, you know, series that's based on a couple verses, you're doing a lot of extra biblical kind of maybe takes on certain things. Like, I think Matthew had like some sort of, was on the spectrum and like things like that aren't like quite. So I was surprised that the audience was mature enough
to give that creative license,
give the creative license to understand what is biblical, what's not, what kind of helps maybe color picture, but it's not like redrawing the picture.
That's the part. It feels like some of the He Gets Us stuff, I haven't seen all of it, but the ones I've seen, some of the images feels like it's redrawing.
That's interesting.
The picture. And I think if you're literally saying, oh, no, this is exactly what Jesus did, but it feels like you've redrawn what Jesus did, I feel like that can cause confusion.
Can you dive into that a little bit more? Because like the difference between The Chosen and then these commercials, where it was like, from your point of view, it was the audience was able to be a little bit more mature maybe and interpret it the right way. Do you think that's the job of the audience then, of the commercials of He Gets Us, not to interpret
it? Well, I think it comes to the ultimate premise of even just that phrase, He Gets Us, right? I think the point is, do we get him?
Interesting. Yeah.
Now, I don't fully understand the controversy. You know what I mean? Is part of the controversy with the, meaning just because I haven't like done a deep dive to know and I haven't seen a lot of the commercials, is part of it that it's like giving license to...
I think that would be probably some of the critique.
Okay,
I think probably some of the critique is what Arun said earlier, of the idea of come as you are is an incomplete idea.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So, you know, the good news is very good news, right? But then it kind of becomes challenging news.
Right.
So what I mean is like the grace of God, you could not earn it. There's nothing that you could do. And you can receive it no matter how jacked up you were, no matter how messed up you were, no matter how many mistakes you were. That's why the grace of God is so compelling, right? That's why the grace of God, you know, that there's so much anointing that breaks the yoke in that, because the forgiveness, no matter what you've done, is so good and so palpable. Literally, God sent his son to die for humanity that would believe. Right. And so that goodness is so good. But then when you say, I receive Jesus's death as a sacrifice for my sins, you're now saying, okay, cool. I received his goodness. Now it's my turn to die. That's the challenging news.
Right.
It's like, okay, now it's my turn to come into full submission to your ways. And that's kind of the, I'm saved and also being saved, right? Yeah. It's this constant process of, yes, thank you, God, for your salvation, but now you are Lord.
Right.
And I think that is the incomplete idea of
so it's kind of like this, the idea of like maybe the commercial state as in the come as you are, and then it's being interpreted as stay as you are.
Yep.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Potentially.
Gotcha.
Right. But I do think the basis though of what my opinion, it's just my opinion of some of the drawings and the images seeming to be a redrawing that's not fully scripturally accurate. What I'm saying is that could be in and of itself confusing. Right? That's why I say, man, big ups to those that want to tackle projects like The Chosen, because you're really saying, we're going to reenact actual scripture. And that's got to be a big challenge.
There's this, I'm going to butcher it, and I probably should know the verse, but the one that challenged me about this particular subject matter is there's a verse in the Bible that distills down to, even if it was done poorly, like the representation of like my name, as long as Christ was glorified, then he can redeem it essentially. And I got really, really like, you know, challenged by that particular verse, because I think I was the first to critique not stuff like that, but to pastors or like things that were happening in the church in terms of like that didn't feel like biblical and stuff like that. And I remember reading this verse and it like really stopped my like thought process on that. Cause like I'm trying to like, I don't fully know the organization behind the This Is Us and like all that. And what even like where they get their funding from or what their mission is. Or I know that they hired 72 and Sunny, which is a huge ad agency in, in LA. They're not faith-based. So, you know, they're just probably the more skilled executor than they are the vision behind it. Because I think it's hard to be all things to all people in the terms of like if that commercial was supposed to communicate from like the grace to like come to the altar like and like, you know, change. I don't know if a 30-second commercial would ever do that.
Right.
At the same time, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't like hold like certain like principles and stuff like that. Because I would have thought to the critique that you're having, which I think is a fair critique, I thought more people would have had to The Chosen. Just because of the, it is actually direct biblical. So that really is kind of interesting to see like where we've evolved in terms of what people are okay with or not. And I think it actually partially has to do with who's saying it and what side of the aisle you're saying it from.
I also think my artistic critique is it seems to be trying to conform to culture more than it is trying to contrast culture. And my thing is some of the most beautiful art brings an incredible contrast. You know, that's why whether you love him or hate him, Kanye has produced some of the most compelling art because he's such a contrast, right? And some of the things that he's produced typically have been in that vein. And so the conformity to me to culture, so like this whole idea, again, the premise, he gets us. It's almost speaking to what culture, it's like, it's this whole idea of like, okay, what's in it for me? You know, oh, I just want somebody to see me and, and get me and somebody just affirm me and accept to affirm my identity. And it's kind of, it's kind of like, okay, that's what everybody's saying.
I think
he gets us could have been mistaken for, are you talking about my company? That's what they tell me. Do you know what I'm saying? And so even from our artistic perspective, I feel like it's too much conforming to some of the DEI narrative and things like that, where it's like, okay, well, sure, there's probably elements in that that we can extract a biblical principle, but that's actually no different from what the world is trying to preach, which is definitely not Jesus, right? Does that make sense?
Was that always their campaign or just this particular?
No, that's always been there. So they've done this two Super Bowls in a row.
I mean, like you said, it's hard to please everybody. And but like, it's nice though that, you know, there is an attempt, I think, to kind of intercept that plane of like what would usually be a non-Christian kind of space. Like the Super Bowl, it's just like commercials that don't exist. But like there also is a responsibility if you are entering that space to not create more confusion, like Pastor Vance is saying. And on that topic, it's kind of interesting now with like generative AI. I'd be curious to hear what your thoughts are. And this ability now for anybody to create mass amounts of content, especially in like the film or media space, and like how that's been for you and like how you're taking advantage of like Gen AI in film.
I mean, it's definitely the most amount of like questions I think has resulted out of the most recent Sora that had come out. And even the industry this last year has been having the conversation more from the standpoint of image and likeness, the idea of how do you protect actors or, you know, people that are now able to remix, you know, because essentially generative AI is just training on existing things. And you're just basically, at some point it's modeled or trained off of like an existing photo and so on. Or, I mean, we've even used it more recently on one of my films where, and with the actor's permission, or sorry, the subject's permission, we would close gaps in lines by training the AI, the voice. And then, so instead of having to re-record or you know, sometimes it could be, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to like bring everybody back together, we just train the voice and then like off camera or whatever, a new line or whatever. And we're able to put a lot of pieces together in that sense.
In your opinion, is it pretty indistinguishable? That's so cool.
It was pretty scary how indistinguishable it was. I mean,
you like, save so much money.
Save so much money. And for the talent, like they were appreciative too because they didn't have to like put more work in.
Right, right.
In a weird way. Mm-hmm. Like that's not going to be the case for everybody because obviously people want to be able to monetize their time and,
definitely.
You know, and that's the question that I think is everybody's grappling with is like, how do you monetize it? And then even to some degree, how do you regulate it mm-hmm. so that it doesn't completely kill off like an entire division or position inside of the film industry? And mm-hmm. most recently, I think with Sora, the challenge of that became what does film infrastructure look like? Mm-hmm. For creatives, it's an amazing time because you can, with almost no money, no resource, get something made.
Right, right.
And I'm more in that camp, but I think I might not be as affected by that as maybe a gaffer would,
right.
or a PA would, or mm-hmm. somebody else that might have a career in a part of the dependency of the infrastructure yep. of film.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I have a skewed opinion on it. I can't speak for it. But I also know that most people that do get into the film industry do want to direct
yeah.
or do want to act or do want to do something else bigger. There are some union people that are doing what they do and they're very talented with what they do. But I also am a firm believer that a gaffer is just a really skilled electrician. So he or she will find work maybe in another area, but it is scary to think about like it could really drastically change what it looks like for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with any kind of technological revolution that happens, we used to have people that, I don't know what they're called, but like the telephone operators that would like,
yeah. Yeah.
you know,
switch operators.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like, we don't have that anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like there's obvious things that are going to be innovated out of certain roles or jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, it's like there's no better time to be a creator
right.
than there is now.
Oh, it's the best time.
It's yeah. the best time to be a creator.
Oh, my goodness. And, you know, the creatives are going to get rewarded, I think, because they have even more tools at their disposal. And it's interesting. You said something at FlowCon that actually was really cool perspective with things like Sora, right? It's actually kind of an indication of how much we want to be like our father.
Yeah.
That we want to say things and then it be created.
Mm,
just like God said, let there be light. Mm, yeah. And there was light.
Yeah. Interesting.
We can
that was the ultimate form of like,
yeah.
And I have this like, kind of like maybe even like post-apocalyptic, like scary kind of like visual, but also beautiful mm-hmm. is like, you know, we are created beings made by an ultimate creator.
Mm-hmm.
And in that he has created all things, including us. And what is the one thing that we want our ultimate form of creation to look like?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Us.
Mm-hmm.
We want robots to look like us. Mm-hmm. We want, in the same way that we were created in the image of the Father, we want our now next like version of creation to look like us.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it so profound that like, you know, we want to do all the things that Dad wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
We want to speak things into existence. We want, you know, things that we create to like take on forms of more than just, we want it to think for itself to some degree, right?
Mm-hmm.
AGI is kind of the idea that like this computer will like think for itself and be able to be more responsive than just being dictated
right.
what to do. And maybe even in return, give us love or gratitude or, you know, a feeling of like that we had purpose by building this thing. And mm-hmm. I find it very interesting. I'm not trying to take this to a place where like, it's maybe like anti-biblical, but mm-hmm. like I find a lot of like interest around like that's kind of like where AI robots, all that is kind of headed. But mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, it is very interesting to think about like what the future is going to look like for creating. Please try opening Spotify to continue.
Me.
I was like, where is that coming from?
I don't know if it's me.
So. Is that God?
God.
Well, that is an interesting tension, right? Of obviously Christian is little Christ. So we want to be mm-hmm. like God. But there's a very, you know, fine line with wanting to be God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
And to me, it's like, where does humanity cross that?
Because
mm-hmm. at some point we will, I mean, we are always trying as a, maybe not as Christians, but as like the human race. This is kind of the next forefront or the frontier that mm-hmm. we're, and I think with that, it's like great power comes great responsibility
yeah,
to know how to regulate it, to know how to bring rules around it. But unlimited potential or power unlocking of the mind is what we're talking about here.
And mm-hmm. I think something that's really interesting is that people are going to realize who we really are, because now you're building your biases into stuff. And like Google had there, we talked about it in the last pod, but like you what will see failure. Yourself. Yeah, you what will see failure. Yourself
Dude,
come
so
out
crazy.
In the
like,
stuff you're building.
Crazy. Right? A company like that could have mm-hmm.
Well, that's
a
what I was talking about, right? About, yeah. right? It's like it is part of that DEI narrative mm-hmm. that gets even a company like Google's core mission off mission.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
When I joined Google, it was to organize, it still is today, I think, to organize the world's information to make it universally accessible to all.
Right.
And when they released this AI, it was to confuse the world's mm-hmm. information, because you got away from first principle.
Yeah.
Right. Because there is an agenda.
Yeah.
And so I think that we just have to be aware mm-hmm. of that. And why I am a fan of capitalism, I like to think that I have a conscience about it. But what I like about capitalism is that, you know, with something like this, the market will tell you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? The market will tell you. And the market clearly was trying to tell Google, hey, look, like this agenda has gone too far. And now you're confusing me mm-hmm. when I'm trying to search information.
Yeah.
I used to go to Google to get facts.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm just getting a perspective.
Out right. of curiosity, like with something like that, because I'm always trying to figure out when a blunder like that happens, how much of it was there's a specific group of people that had the agenda versus like it's like corporate level or like maybe like leadership level. Obviously, at some point, it has to go up through to leadership. But
I don't think it's too... as pervasive as like, oh, this is the whole company.
Yeah.
I definitely don't think that, because
right.
I know
yeah.
a lot of friends at Google that like were maybe just as shocked as,
yeah,
as we were.
Totally, yeah.
It's definitely a subsection of people. And I definitely think that leadership either was part of it or tolerated it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And so that's what culture is. We actually talked about that at FlowCon, is culture is whatever you celebrate or tolerate.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I do think that maybe it was this subtle thing that was invading the company. And it just manifested into this moment where it's like, wow, we have drifted
yeah.
so far. And I think the subtle thing is when companies felt like, oh, DEI is where the market is going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And oh, okay, there's a business reason. So then we're going to hire certain people. And then maybe those people had some agendas. Maybe some of those people were even radicalized
sure.
with their agenda and, you know, invaded some of these principles in the company that led them down this pathway.
Yeah.
But then again, capitalism, the market will tell you.
Yeah.
You've gone too far.
Ooh, I think the world did tell them. Yeah.
Let's bring some correction to this if you want to continue to compete.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And like one last thing before, I know we're pretty close to time. That I wanted to touch
this
on.
This is not one of those 3-hour podcasts on
I mean, we could go 3 hours, honestly. But I just want to tie this back to storytelling. And I know right now, AI, Gen AI is like lowering the barrier to entry. Like even in my profession, I think recently Cognition, I think, just built the first like software engineer with AI. And it's
yeah,
like fully.
Devin.
Yeah, Devin.
Crazy.
It's crazy. I might need to look for a new job. But it's like,
same.
These are
all
yeah, right.
We'll so, need to look for a new yeah. job now.
But it's all just tools, right? And I think what this is going to bring out, especially in like this space that you guys are working in as a creative, is like, there's more emphasis on storytellers, right? And people that can use these tools to really tell stories. And I feel like we might actually just get more stories, more people that are able to tell their stories and better stories. It's kind of like when the phone camera came out, and now everybody could just take pictures of everything, and like you had Instagram, but now the content that's being created is like leveled up, in my opinion. I don't know, there's a lot more of it, but there's a few creators who are able to like, you know, maximize that. And I feel like, what do you think? Do you think it's gonna be better stories out there, or just gonna be a lot of people that are just like lowering the bar for like a story?
I mean, I think
is.
It's a mix of both. I think yeah. you're gonna see a lot more crap out there.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's just like when you lower the bar, you know, you will just see more things flood into the market.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in our industry, a version of that was like content creators and YouTube, right?
Yeah.
Like YouTube opened up the floodgates mm-hmm. for a whole new type of content, storytelling even. And I think from that, you've seen some really beautiful things come out of it that have now made it into theaters and mm-hmm. like have like, you know, ultimately prevailed. And I think with that, like, I think you just have to learn how to progress. Like, I think for me, I don't value my practicality as much as I value my ideas and the problem solving that I have. Mm-hmm. So like for me, it doesn't matter what the platform or the tool set is, I'm going to still figure out how to create.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use what is available to me mm-hmm. to create. And so hopefully that's not bad or crap, but I mean, it could be perceived that way if I'm just right. using a bunch of AI for stuff. You mm-hmm. know, you could probably tell that it's not as good. But I think as this evolves, I think people should learn to adopt what that looks like in that medium. Yeah, because I mean, there's no going back from it. It's kind of like you open Pandora's box and then you're saying like, oh, should you not use this and to try to be true to... I mean, there's definitely culture, like a cultural aspect of it that I think some people will be very against it. Some people will be for it. I think in the filmmaking industry, it was like when film went from film to digital, mm-hmm. there's this whole like group or subset of a group that are very anti-digital and everything has to be shot on film for it to be original and for it to like feel like the original art form. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I've also remembered this story about like when AI was starting to come up, the idea of like how portraits used to be before photography, and it was all like drawings and like really like incredibly talented painters that could almost get photoreal. And then photography came out and it was like, oh man, we're all out of a job. Nobody's going to draw anymore. Nobody's going to paint anymore. And that wasn't true.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, so there, I think that will exist. Mm-hmm. The previous version of the art form, I think you're just going to see now a lot of the same is true with like, just because the iPhone came out and you can take pictures on your phone, that doesn't mean like photography as an industry
right.
has suffered or has gotten worse. In some ways it might've gotten better. In some ways that it's just, has decentralized certain aspects of it that like anybody correct. Can do, you know?
It's good. Yeah,
that makes sense. Well, we really appreciate you coming on to the podcast.
Let's go.
Do you want to tell the audience what you have coming up next for you in the space?
Yeah. So we've got a couple films that are coming out. I don't have dates for them. So like, I don't want to share specific dates. We have a, one of the cool ones that I'm looking forward to is we have a film about how faith and science actually are more closer together than they are separate or opposite.
Nice. That's huge.
Which has been kind of like a cultural narrative that mm-hmm. like you're dumb and you don't really
for sure
know use science if you're faith and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of cool like scientific discoveries that have happened in the last like 50 years that would show otherwise. And so that's called the working title is The Story of Everything.
Cool.
And it kind of goes from like like early creation to now. And it doesn't really follow the, right now it's like you either have evolution or you have creationism. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really follow the creationism narrative either, just because creationism was trying to share science out of the Bible, which is not necessarily what this film or this particular vertical of science is trying to do. It's called intelligent design. Mm. We actually have Peter Thiel in the film.
Oh, wow.
Which is actually pretty crazy. So we have people outside of direct faith
circles, mm-hmm.
and circles and just thought leaders and scientists and
so
stuff
cool.
In the film. So I'm very looking forward to that. I think that's like a great follow-up to After Death. And then we've since created a fintech platform called Saturation, and that's been an effort to build better tools around filmmaking and particularly the film finance management. Mm-hmm. I tell people all the time, I went to LA to be a creative and I ended up becoming an accountant. And we're trying to help allow creatives to not have to do some of the logistical stuff.
I love that.
Have to do. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Pastor Vance, anything else?
No, man, this was a great conversation. Thanks so much. Pastor Adam, we miss you, but mm-hmm, I'm glad that we could open up some space for a guest. And I think we're going to run it back next week.
Yep.
Maybe switch places. Pastor Adam's going to have you and a guest next week. So stay tuned for the next pod because we're going to keep these guests rolling.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yeah. Cheers, thanks everybody. For having me.
Yep.
Thanks.
Cheers. Yeah.